Chapter 21. A Murder of Crows. Sacrifice. Double-edged gift. The second day of the invasion was coming to a close when the Lords of Night held conclave.
Would anyone perhaps care to tell me why, when we are 20,000 fine killers in number, we cannot take one small mountain off a handful of Gilliman's brigade of public officials?
Krukesh swept his sword down, shattering the top of the table hololith into square shards of black glass. The rotating image of Mount Pharos fizzed and popped out of existence.
If only it were so easy, said Clawmaster Benthan Gesh.
He spoke behind his hand, but intended that everyone hear.
You do realize, Gesh, that every hour we are here brings us closer to defeat. The Ultramarines will be on their way here. Rabute Gilliman has a mind like an abacus, but even he shall be able to see, once he has exhausted every tedious line of logical deduction, that we are the totality of the threat, that there is no realm-wide invasion coming. Once he realizes that there is only our force, he will come down on this planet waxing wrathful. He has a reputation for weakling mercy, but I am sure even his refined sense of justice will not stop him putting your head upon a pike when he gets here. Then I ask, Clawlord, why are we engaged in this offensive at all?
Said Gesh, who was not a warrior to be easily cowed by anyone, least of all Krukesh.
We have taken an excess of casualties. It is all well to sneer at the Wardens of Ultramar as slaves to base humanity, but they fight boldly. That is why we do not have their mountain.
Krukesh leaned on the wreck of the table.
I would take care not to address me again in that manner, Claw Master. Of course, Claw Lord,
Gesh said snidely.
We are here because that beacon offers the Ultramarines something, and I want it. Who knows what else it does? It is not only a light in the sky.
Scryvok snorted.
Do you find something funny, Scryvok?
Said Krukesh. The Claw Lord fixed him with his doleful black eyes.
No, my lord. A recalled irony, that is all. If you would be so good as to return your attention to the matter at hand.
Scryvok bowed sharply. The enmity Krukesh had for him radiated even stronger. He could not fathom why he had attracted such opprobrium from the Claw Lord, and in light of that, it was an even greater mystery why Krukesh had rescued him in the first place. Both questions vexed Scryvok greatly. No answer could be found, a regrettable state of affairs that seemed to be his lot of late.
The Ultramarines are led by Pollux of the Fists and his pet warsmith. Their expertise in siegecraft is evident in what they have achieved.
Scryvok activated a subsidiary hololith projector. A smaller version of the mountain was called into being.
These cave mouths have been blocked by engineered rockfalls. I suspect that many of them are blinds. We are attempting deep auspex, but the beacon throws off virtually all our scans. You saw what happened when your fleet arrived to our rendezvous, and they ignited the beacon permanently, my lord.
A sneer was all the acknowledgement Scryvok received. The initial lighting of the Pharos had sent out an electromagnetic pulse so far into the void that it had affected their ships right on the edge of the system.
They have retained several entrances, but these are small and in inaccessible areas, easily held by a small number against a far larger force.
Our force, you mean,
said Grukir the Vile, captain of the 89th.
A force that is getting rapidly smaller.
Let the man speak, said Gesh wearily. I am in no hurry for another assault, but time is wasting. They are also sallying out. Our scouting parties are continuously harried.
Define harried for me, Scryvok,
said Krukesh acidly.
More of our long-range patrols to the upper mountain or into the caves do not come back than do, said Scryvok simply. That is what I mean by harried. Have we a better idea of their numbers? Said Jufania Paladan of the 19th.
Gesh spoke again.
Not really. If we assume a full company split between the platform and the castellum, 100 or so might have escaped into the mountain. There is also the Mechanicum contingent, but that is pathetically small, and not of the Tagmata. Some small number of mortal troops, but they are negligible in effectiveness. Perhaps half the civilian population also fled into the caves. We have not found them. I myself have come up against legionaries of the Imperial Fists, and there are also some indications of mixed squads of other legions loyal to the false emperor.
He asked this of Varakesh, a brutish captain whose face was a knotted mess of plasma burn scars. Varakesh nodded.
Token numbers, nothing more.
Now, if we assume no more than 200 legionaries and perhaps a dozen Mechanicum constructs, perhaps the same amount of auxiliaries.
Gesh tapped at the hololith's control slab. Orange glowed at various points on the mountainside.
These are the entrances to the mountain that we know of. This is the optimal tactical disposition. But of course, we do not know which of these are true entrances and which are decoys. Nor do we have any idea of the internal layout of the mountain.
What did the captives say? Said Krukesh.
That the mountain is honeycombed by endless caverns, said Gesh. None have ever been far inside. Superstitions and simple fear of being lost. Further to that, Gilliman enacted an order barring access to the mountain over a century ago. Images, writing, even drawings of the mountain were prohibited by decree. So I can say, well,
none of them know anything, concluded Krukesh for him.
No matter how hard they were questioned, no, my lord, conceded Gesh. They speak of light burning from the caves at dawn and dusk, and strange dreams that affect all on this world. These are not natural phenomena. The mountain is probably a device. I surmise it was discovered here, not built by the Primarch Gilliman. It is old, this thing. This fortress atop the mountain is keeping our air support away, said Scryvok.
He pointed to the Emperor's watch.
A concerted orbital beam strike should bring it down. If we were to destroy it, we might be better placed to land directly upon the slopes or upon this promontory here. But they have been firing anti-ship missiles from the cavities, so I would not assume easy access, even should we destroy the fort.
There is to be no heavy fire upon the mountain, said Krukesh. We have no idea what equipment might be housed in that fort. We could destroy what we have come to take for our own.
The enemy themselves brought down large parts of the mountainside, pointed out Paladan. All rock, none of the glass tunnels so far as we can ascertain, said Gesh.
They have the advantage of familiarity, said Krukesh. They are in a position to know which pieces can be safely broken, while we are not. How are the pattern testers for teleport assault faring?
Poorly, my lord,
said Hakar of the Deep, captain of the 104th, with a surly tone. A teleport assault on the main chamber would bring the battle to a swift close. Upon his efforts depended the lives of his brothers, and they were not backward in reminding him of it.
The mountain is impermeable to every kind of probe we can conduct. Our forge serfs and Mechanicum allies repeatedly attempt a lock upon the chamber we are sure is at the peak by the funicular terminus. But whenever we scan the mountain, any part of it, it is as if there is nothing there.
There must be something,
growled Krukesh.
We cannot see it. Our astropaths can do no better, said Hekar apologetically. The mountain is unreadable, a spatial and psychic blank.
Warp craft?
It is something else, said Hekar.
Krukesh looked at his underlings in turn. They returned his regard with almost as much contempt. Scryvok hid his glee. Krukesh was taxing what fragile unity he had brought with him with this attack. It was becoming clear curiosity and ambition rather than necessity drove his strategy to take the mountain. The Night Lords were no strangers to the shedding of blood. They enjoyed it immensely, providing, of course, it was the blood of strangers. Spilling their own so freely was not to their liking, and for the last day they had been bleeding heavily.
We will continue with my plan. We shall assault all the entrances simultaneously, said Krukesh. They cannot defend all of them equally. That way we shall break them.
They can defend some of them very well, my lord, said Gesh dryly.
You are warriors, shouted Krukesh. Some of you will die, but we will prevail. Is that not the prosecution of war?
Rather, a lot of us will die, corrected Gesh, and not all of us are comfortable with that. This beacon is important, that is clear to us all. We should smash it now, before we are overwhelmed in counterattack.
Are you disobeying me, Gesh? Said Krukesh.
Two Atramenta came into the command tent, summoned wordlessly by Krukesh from outside. They stood at his shoulders, the helm lenses of their massive Terminator warsuits fixed upon Gesh. Heat washed off their power plants, the thin skin of their energy fields glowed with residual radioactivity.
Draw up your plans. Submit them for my approval tomorrow by nightfall. We attack by darkness. Tread carefully, Gesh. You can be replaced.
As can you,
Gesh muttered darkly. He stalked out of the room. Three of the 16 captains present went with him. More pointedly looked away from him at this display of defiance. Scryvok stayed rooted to his place.
Ever the loyal servant, he thought bitterly.
In the alternative, any one of you who finds a way into that mountain will be richly rewarded,
Krukesh said.
Now, go about your business.
With many a sharp look at Hekar, the clawmasters of the Night Lords filed out. Not one spoke, either to their fellows or to their commander. The air was heavy with intrigue.
Now this,
thought Scryvok, as he followed them out into Sotha's sultry evening,
is getting interesting.
Scryvok made his way back through the camp to his own command. Day retreated. Sunlight filtered through the ruin storm, stained everything a deep red. Vehicle exhaust tainted the air, and drafts of fierce heat wafted out everywhere from power units and engines. They were doing this properly, the old way, their camp a temporary city constructed to methods older than the Great Crusade. Modular barracks stood in neat rows, thrown up in the space of hours by dedicated serf teams. Each company's subcamp centered on its armory buildings. A defensive wall of prefabricated sections defined its edge. The grid pattern of Sothopolis helped. How kind of the Ultramarines it had been to leave most of their city as bare lots. There had been no need to prepare the ground. All they had done was knock down a few fences, and everything was ready for them to move in. The Night Lords had laid out a landing zone at the very center, abuzz with the comings and goings of small craft. A line of lights in the sky delimited the stacked flight paths of the vehicles bringing more equipment down to the spaceport. Heavy trucks rumbled in and out of the four gates. The camp had all been planned and laid out with customary Space Marine efficiency, although not many legions would have cared for the Night Lord's decorations. Crucified, skinless civilians, some still clinging to agonized life, were arrayed around the perimeter on metal crosses. It reminded Scryvok very much of past compliances, Sharrow in particular. On seeing this, perhaps the Lord of Macraig would regret the humbling of Kurz by his brother Dorn. A deep pang of nostalgia surprised him. He fought against it. He had no sympathy for the Emperor's wars, not any more. The Night Lords had done their duty and been looked at askance for the methods the Emperor had ordered them to use. Always they had been regarded as villains of the blackest degree, even though their terror tactics preserved far more lives than the cleaner warfare of other legions. As monsters was how they were seen, and so monsters were what they had become. As Kurz had always told them, they could not escape their nature. They had always known who they were. Skryvok steadfastly ignored how, as time passed, the newer recruits from Nostromo reveled in the carnage and did not see it as a grim duty. He tried not to remember when things were different, when atrocity was performed for a higher purpose and not for atrocity's sake. As Kurz had also said, things cannot be any other way than what they are. He had heard the likes of Kellenvar talking of how the Night Lords were stronger than all the rest, that they would go forth, cast down the lying Emperor, and live as princes among men. As he smelled the burning flesh, the stink of blood and fear-voided bowels, he knew in his heart that could never be. They were monsters. He was a monster. How odd to view oneself so. No man ever sets out to be a monster. And yet here he was, monstrous.
Things cannot be any other way.
Skryvok passed into the square grouping of his company barracks. The full complement of buildings had been erected, because that was the way things were done. Never mind that only half the racks would ever be occupied in those brief hours the Space Marines slept. Screams came from one of the vacant barracks, followed by ugly laughter. Part of him wanted to go in and see what was happening, to partake of the entertainment. Another part of him was sickened, a part that grew weaker by the day.
I am tired, he thought.
His quarters had been erected and awaited, a modular building half the size of the barracks. The banners of his company flapped outside. The doors recognized him and opened. He stepped into the cleansing room, where warm water hosed down his armor from every angle. Still dripping, he went into his arming chamber. There, four silent servitors removed his armor. Skryvok had not had an equerry for a long time. There was no one he trusted enough. Dressed in simple robes, he went into his personal chamber, a large enough space centered by three braziers of lazily smoking incense. Metal floors were cold under his feet. His serfs were frightened of him enough not to be a danger. They scurried about, forever on the edge of terror, fetching him food and drink. Some of it was simple stuff taken from the silos of the conquered. It was a pleasure to eat after so long consuming the Umber Prince's emergency rations. Sensing him satisfied, his serfs withdrew to whatever hovels they occupied in the slave camp outside the walls. Skryvok called up the Umber Prince to grill Shipmaster Hrantax about the progress of the repairs. He baited his servant, but was mostly pleased by his progress. The orbital facilities the Ultramarines had were modest, but far better than nothing. There was a pile of data slates on his desk, fresh orders and casualty reports. They could wait. He prepared to retire, for he had had no natural sleep for days. He remembered his days as a youngster. Those times of revels when the halls of his ancestral home were full of adults, every one a danger to him. The last week had been like that, constantly on his guard.
Even monsters need to sleep, he said to himself.
A low chuckle had him spinning round. A horrible noise, guttural and feline, as much full of pain as amusement. Skryvok had fought his share of Xenos over the centuries. This laugh was unlike any other he'd ever heard. It was not human, and it was not alien. Inhuman, that was the word. His hand went for a weapon that was not there. Then his fist clenched, and anger took control.
Verenon, what are you doing in here? I did not hear you enter.
The librarian stood behind a brazier of glowing incense coals. His face was in shadow, and he stood awkwardly, his knees twisted sideways. He leaned against the wall for support.
You did not hear me enter, said Baranon.
His voice was affected in some way, deep and raspy, the suggestion of the same feline growling beneath it.
Are you injured? Said Scryvok.
No, said the librarian.
What is it, Baranon? If you bring me any other news than a way into the mountain, you can go away.
I bring you an offer. Hear it out, Lord of the Night.
Baranon drew in a long, difficult breath and stepped into the light. His left foot dragged on the floor. His hand disturbed the hangings on the walls. The librarian lifted his head, and he smiled, an expression the miserable man was not known to employ. Not his expression at all, Scryvok realized with shock. Baranon's face was slack and sickly grey. Ropes of drool ran from twitching lips. The eyes in that morbid flesh were changed. Red orbs shot through with gold, with no discernible pupil, and they flicked tremblingly back and forth.
Gendor Scryvok!
The voice was not the librarian's. The movement of his lips did not match the words. Scryvok had the awful sensation that it was the eyes that spoke, and not Baranon. Scryvok moved behind his desk, snatching up the bolt gun resting in a stand beside it. He leveled it at the creature in front of him. It made no move on him, and he held his fire.
You are not Baranon!
The thing ran a long pink tongue over its teeth. These were Baranon's own flat, grey human teeth one moment, the sharp translucent needles of an aquatic predator the next. Baranon's mouth moaned.
You are astute. I borrow his flesh. A fine mind, this one, strong and willful, but the walls of the world are thin, and he has lost his way. It is not easy to talk to you so, but possible, yes, possible. I have heard of members of the 17th Legion who let the things of the warp into their flesh to become their slaves. Are you such as they?
Yes and no. I am less and yet greater. I need no permission. Erebus Storm opens the way for the likes of me. Such a time this is, when our worlds might meet and freely intermingle.
If you seek worship, you will not find it. We are stronger than the others.
You are haughty. You are deluded.
The last word came out as a long, drawn-out hiss.
We are not Lorgar's monks. We will not bend our knee to you. You will find no worship here, shouted Scryvok.
He waited for a response to his shouting, but sound in the room had taken on a dead quality, and he knew he could count on no help from elsewhere.
All will bend their knee to the Lords of the Warp. You think you are strong, but you are weak. You are of flesh. All things made of dirt and fire are feeble before the power of chaos. Come closer, and I will show you how weak I am. You think yourself strong, like your master. I have had the measure of him who fought with me in the realms of thought. He thinks me bested where I am not. At this moment, he runs hither and thither upon the dust ball of Macragge, pursuing errands not his own.
Curse! Our lord is on Macragge!
You call him lord still. This creature that would destroy you to sate his petty desires. Is he worthy of your fealty? You are not strong, Gendor Scryvok, but I can make you strong. I bring offer of alliance. Utilize what you may to our mutual advantage, for is that not the rule of the strong?
I do not care for your conversation, said Scryvok. He lifted his bolter high.
Hear me out. There is power in this shell, and it burns quickly. Send me back, or watch me go, and you will never benefit. I come to give aid only to the worthy.
You are speaking to me.
Scryvok's palms were sweating. The presence of the thing inside his librarian mentally pained him. A terrible pressure crawled at the back of his skull. Spots swam in front of his eyes. Phantom smells troubled him, no less so for their fleeting presence.
Your ambition is ablaze. Your cynicism, sweet wine. You are an acquired taste, Gendor Scryvok, the painted count, but one that delights my palate. You are worthy. Together, you and I can realize your desire.
Again, that slender tongue licked teeth that were first one form and then another.
You offer me power, yet you require my help. You do not seem so powerful.
This lighthouse is a thing of our ancient foe. It is a feeble candle against the inferno of the storm. But I see further. The storm will pass as all storms do. The beacon must be destroyed, or it shall one day be used as a weapon against us, as it once was in aeons past.
The creature laughed again. Baranon's body convulsed with the effort of it hard enough to crack his ribs. Red tinted the saliva that ran from his mouth.
They tried so hard to best us. But where are they now?
I do not know to whom you refer.
Be thankful you do not. This great struggle of yours is but the latest skirmish in a war that has gone on since time began. Look fully upon me. See how my essence reworks the flesh of your comrade at my will. Am I not majestic? Am I not terrible?
Baranon shuffled from the wall and stood tall. Then he crouched and wagged a finger at Scryvok.
But there are worse things in this lifeless realm of yours than a humble interloper such as myself.
Our objective is to take the Pharos, said Scryvok. I will not profit from its destruction.
What I speak of will come in years beyond reckoning. It shall be yours while you need it. Think, Gendor Scryvok. Your own leader despises you. He has promised reward to the one who leads him within. You cannot project your forms of caged energy through the realm of thought. The entropic light of the beacon interferes with your technology. It prevents your passage through the warp. I can bypass it. You speak of the Atramentar.
The creature snarled. When it was done, half of Berenon's face remained locked in the expression. The other half sagged awfully. There was a palpable heat coming from the librarian. Wisps of steam leaked out around his collar seal, and the veins on his neck stood out.
Yes, yes. Dead things, dead meat, clothed in dead metal. This reality is so crude. I shall guide your feeble manipulations of dead matter through the realm of the Empyrean. I know only a little of your kind, legends and old stories. What I do know tells me not to trust you. Hearken, and you shall know more. I saw Nostramo. I have walked the dark dreams of the children who cowered there. We are always alongside you, whether you deny us or not, and only ever a nightmare away.
The legends are true, and the old stories seem not to be stories, said Scryvok, ignoring the demon's hyperbole. If there is any wisdom in these fairy tales, all of them are clear on one point. There is always a cost for the favors of beings such as yourself.
Naturally, said the creature. Service without payment is slavery. I am slave of no man, nor ever shall be.
Berenon's body jerked as its puppeteer pulled on unseen strings. His back arched so hard that were he not wearing his full plate, his back would have surely broken.
Tell me your price, demon, or begone. What do you want? My soul? A vial of child's tears?
Nothing so esoteric. I desire ingress, hissed the demon. Let me through, and we shall work towards each other's aims. Deny me, and in 4 days you shall be dead. My kind are not bound by time. I have seen it, Gendor Scryvok, as surely as I see you here. Krukesh, said Scryvok. Frustrated by your failures and provoked by the one called Gesh, he will make an example of you in the singular manner of your legion. He will fail here, driven off by the avenging son of the thrice-cursed Emperor of Terra. He is coming already. The storm will slow him, but it is only a matter of time. Seek within yourself. You know it is true. Your Primarch insists that all is fated. Here is a chance to find out if that is true. I give you a choice. Glory and life, or...
Red tears of blood ran from its demonic eyes.
Death.
They stared at each other, the demon and the man. As much as Scryvok wanted to unload the clip of his bolter into the possessed Berenon and send his passenger screaming back into the hell of the warp, he did not. The pressure in Scryvok's head only grew, making it hard to think.
Swear there is no trick to this.
None. You desire to survive. You desire power. You cannot have the second without the first, and I will bring you both. In return, you will help me. I am a soldier of the ages, and I offer a warrior's bargain. That is all.
Scryvok hesitated. He had never thought to be faced with a choice such as this. Smoke boiled out of the librarian's neck seal now. Perspiration ran down that grey flesh. His jaw gaped and popped, and now the demon's voice came out of it, and the piscine teeth remained.
Quickly! I cannot manifest without your permission. This one swore itself to you, body and soul, when it joined your company. Emptily meant, perhaps, but sufficient for our purposes here.
Scryvok gave a quick, reluctant nod. It was enough for the demon. Baranon's face twisted into a terrible smile, too wide for his face, too wide for any face. A foul-smelling wind blew through Scryvok's quarters. His flags and papers fluttered. The coals in the braziers flared brightly. The perfume they gave out swamped by a feculent reek.
Yes, said the demon. Yes.
Baranon's body rose into the air. Lightning, a mockery of the Night Lord's livery perhaps, leapt all over his armor, earthing into the metal floor of the room, growing thicker and more frequent until the librarian appeared to be standing atop a block of writhing electricity. Baranon's eyes slid closed. Scryvok shielded his own against the radiance, his sensitive retinas seared by the glare as flesh warped under the demon's influence. Then the librarian's eyes opened again, and this time Baranon looked out. His eyes were wild with a terror Scryvok had never thought to see in a space marine. Scryvok squinted through his fingers against the blinding light.
Brother? Damn you, Scryvok!
Howled the librarian.
What have you done? What have you done?
Baranon struggled to bring his arms up, but they were chained by lightning. He gritted his teeth, his own teeth again, against the strain.
Damn you!
There was a rending groan, the sound of metal under terrible pressure. Baranon ceased struggling and began to scream, his head thrashing backward and forward. The wind grew stronger. The stink it carried became unbearable. With a wet crack, Baranon's battle plate imploded. Gore fountained from the cracks in his armor and pooled upon the floor as it crumpled into a twisted spike of metal. The lightning dimmed and the wrecked armor descended, festooned with rags of flesh and gut. The bent tip of it passed into the fluids on the floor, carrying on, downward, as if there were nothing beneath. The metal slid away. A few last arcs of lightning skittered over the stilling surface, dancing over lumps of pulped meat. Scryvok approached, gun ready. Blood and slop were all that was left of his librarian. A perfect circle of ripples formed on the blood pool. A round shape emerged. Blood streamed off it so thickly, Scryvok could only tell it was the pommel of a sword when the Quillians broke the surface. Gore ran down it, but the pool was not replenished. Rather, it shrank, as if the sword took the mess into itself as it flowed down the metal. A blade a meter and a half long emerged, tipped with a broad point. The remains of Baranon were sucked away until nothing was left upon the floor. Then the blood ceased to flow along the surface, and the sword became clean. Gobbets of blood and metal flew from all over the room. They defied the stinking gale, splashed gently onto the blade, and were drawn within. Soon there was no sign of what had happened, save a few dents and nicks in the walls and ceiling. The sword hovered in the air. The blade was of dark steel, the grip bound in black leather, while the fittings of the hilt were a dull brass. It was an altogether plain weapon.
"Tomorrow at noon, the way will be opened."
The demon's voice boomed around the room so loudly, Scryvok nearly lost his grip on his weapon with the pain.
"Noon!"
The wind dropped suddenly. The blade fell from the air to the floor with a clatter that rang on for far too long. When it faded, a semblance of normalcy returned. Scryvok shook his head. His ears screamed. His vision trailed the bright afterimages of Berenon's demise, but all was calm. A few of his papers were on the floor. Nothing was amiss. The noises of the camp crept back in from outside. He went to the sword. Without thinking, he bent to pick it up. As his hand neared the grip, he caught an eager whispering far removed from the room. His hair prickled, and a chill ran up his spine. He withdrew his hand sharply. A resolution took hold of him. He would never, ever bear that sword. Scryvok deactivated the stasis field on one of his trophy cabinets. The weapon within had been won at cost in the service of Terror, a master-crafted Kirvani blade that had belonged to their crown prince. Once, it had meant a great deal to him, but no longer. He cast it onto the floor without a thought and called in his servitors. Let them take the demon sword. They did so with no ill effect and placed it in the vacant display. With relief, Scryvok snapped on the stasis field. And then, as his wits gathered themselves and his unease retreated, he had a very fine idea indeed.